It means God is greater.
Than what?
Everything. The whole point of saying it is to remind you that God is greater than whatever you are facing. Your fears, your problems, your thirst, your hunger, your anger. Even your issues with a parent like Loki.
She shook her head.
Sorry, that must sound really hokey to an atheist.
I shrugged, feeling awkward. I wished I could have Sam's level of faith. I didn't, but it clearly worked for her. And I needed her to be confident, especially today. Well, you sound supercharged. That's what counts. Ready to kick some undead butt?
Yep.
She smirked.
What about you? Are you ready to face Alex?
I wondered if God was greater than the punch in the stomach Sam had just given me. What do you mean?
Oh, Magnus, she said. You are so emotionally nearsighted, it's almost cute.
Before I could think of some clever way not to respond to that, perhaps by shouting, "Look over there!" and running away, Scotty's voice boomed through the hall.
There are my early risers!
The giantess was dressed in enough white fur to outfit a family of polar bears. Behind her, a line of servants trudged in, carrying an assortment of wooden skis.
Let's rouse your friends and get you on your way.
Our friends were not thrilled about getting up. I had to pour ice water on half-born Gunderson's head twice. Blitz grumbled something about ducks and told me to go away. When I tried to shake Hearth awake, he stuck one hand above the covers and signed, "I am not here." TJ bolted out of bed screaming, "Charge!" Fortunately, he wasn't armed, or he would have run me through. Finally, everybody assembled in the main hall, where Scotty's servants set our last meal. Sorry, our breakfast of bread, cheese, and apple cider.
This cider was made from the apples of immortality, Scotty said. Centuries ago, when my father kidnapped the goddess Idun, we fermented some of her apples into cider. It's quite diluted. It won't make you immortal, but it will give you a boost of endurance, at least long enough to get through the wilds of Niflheim.
I drained the cup. The cider didn't make me feel particularly boosted, but it did tingle a little. It settled the crackling and popping in my stomach. After eating, we tried on our skis with varying degrees of success. Hearthstone waddled around gracefully in his. Who knew elves could waddle gracefully? While Blitz tried in vain to find a pair that matched his shoes.
Do you have anything smaller? He asked. Also, maybe in a dark brown? Like a mahogany?
Scotty patted him on the head, which wasn't something dwarves appreciated. Mallory and Halfborn shuffled around with ease, but both of them had to help TJ stay on his feet.
Jefferson, I thought you grew up in New England, Halfborn said. You never skied?
I lived in a city, TJ grumbled. Also, I'm black. There weren't a lot of black guys skiing down the Boston waterfront in 1861. Sam looked a little awkward on her skis, but since she could fly, I wasn't too worried about her. As for Alex, she sat by an open window putting on a pair of hot pink ski boots. Had she brought them with her? Had she tipped a servant a few kroner to find her a pair in Scotty's supply closet? I had no idea. But she wouldn't be skiing off to her death in bland white and gray. She wore a green fur cloak, Scotty must have skinned a few Grinches to make it, over her mauve jeans and green and pink sweater vest. To top off the look, she wore an Amelia Earhart-style aviator's cap with her pink sunglasses. Just when I thought I'd seen all the outfits nobody but Alex could pull off, she pulled off a new one. As she adjusted her skis, she paid no attention to the rest of us. And by the rest of us, I mean me. She seemed lost in her thoughts, maybe considering what she would say to her mother, Loki, before she attempted to garrote his head off. At last, we were all in skis, standing in pairs next to the open windows like a group of Olympic jumpers.
"Well, Magnus Chase," Scotty said, "all that remains is the drinking of the mead."
Sam, standing on my left, offered me the canteen. "Oh," I wondered if it was safe to drink mead before operating skis. Maybe the laws were more lax out here in the hinterlands.
"You mean now?" "Yes," Scotty said. "Now."
I uncapped the canteen. This was the moment of truth. We'd ventured across worlds and nearly died countless times. We'd feasted with Aegir, battled pottery with pottery, slain a dragon, and siphoned mead with an old rubber hose just so I could drink this honeyed blood beverage, which would hopefully make me poetic enough to talk smack about Loki. I saw no point in doing a taste test. I chugged down the mead in 3 big gulps. I was expecting the taste of blood, but Kvasir's mead tasted more like, well, mead. It certainly didn't burn like dragon's blood, or even tingle like Scotty's cider of not quite immortality.
"How do you feel?" Blitz asked hopefully. "Poetic?"
I burped. "I feel okay."
"That's it?" Alex demanded. "Say something impressive. Describe the storm."
I gazed out the windows into the blizzard. "The storm looks white. Also cold." Halfborn sighed.
"We're all dead."
"Good luck, heroes,"
Scotty called. Then her servants pushed us out the windows into the void. Chapter 40. I get a collect call from hell. We hurtled through the sky like things that hurtle through the sky. The wind whipped my face. The snow blinded me. The cold was so bad, it made me cold. Okay, yeah. The mead of poetry definitely wasn't working. Then gravity took hold. I hated gravity. My skis scraped and hissed against packed snow. I hadn't been skiing in a long time. I'd never done it careening down a 45-degree slope in sub-zero temperatures and blizzard conditions. My eyeballs froze. The cold seared my cheeks. Somehow, I avoided a wipeout. Each time I started to wobble, my skis auto-corrected, keeping me upright. Off to my right, I caught a glimpse of Sam flying along, her skis 6 feet above the ground. Cheater. Hearthstone zipped past on my left, signing, "On your left," which was not very helpful. In front of me, Blitzen fell out of the sky, screaming at the top of his lungs. He hit the snow and immediately executed a series of dazzling slaloms, figure eights, and triple flips. Either he was a much better skier than he let on, or his magical skis had an evil sense of humor. My knees and ankles burned with strain. The wind ripped straight through my super-heavy giant weave clothes. I figured any minute I would stumble more than my magical skis could compensate for. I'd hit a boulder, break my neck, and end up sprawled across the snow like... forget it. I'm not even trying that one. Suddenly, the slope evened out. The blizzard abated. Our speed decreased, and all 8 of us slid to a gentle stop like we'd just finished the bunny slope at Mount Easy McWeeksauce. Hey, that was a simile. Maybe my usual, just average skill with description was coming back. Our skis popped off of their own accord. Alex was the first one back in motion. She ran ahead and took cover behind a low stone ridge that cut across the snow. I suppose that made sense. since she was the most colorful target within 5 square miles. The rest of us joined her. Our riderless skis turned around and zipped back up the mountain.
So much for an exit strategy.
Alex looked at me for the first time since last night.
You'd better start feeling poetic soon, Chase. 'Cause you're out of time.
I peeked over the ridge and saw what she meant. A few hundred yards away, through a thin veil of sleet, aluminum-gray water stretched to the horizon. At the near shore, rising from the icy bay, was the dark shape of Naglfar, the ship of the dead. It was so huge that if I hadn't known it was a sailing vessel, I might have thought it was another promontory like Skadi's mountain fortress. Its mainsail would have taken several days to climb. Its massive hull must have displaced enough water to fill the Grand Canyon. The deck and gangplank swarmed with what looked like angry ants, though I had a feeling that if we were closer, those shapes would have resolved into giants and zombies. Thousands upon thousands of them. Before, I'd only seen the ship in dreams. Now, I realized how desperate our situation was. 8 people facing an army designed to destroy worlds. And our hopes hinged on me finding Loki and calling him some bad names. The absurdity of it might have made me feel hopeless. Instead, it made me angry. I didn't feel poetic exactly, but I did feel a burning in my throat. The desire to tell Loki exactly what I thought of him. Some choice, colorful metaphors sprang to mind. "I'm ready," I said, hoping I was right. "How do we find Loki without getting killed?" "Frontal charge?" TJ suggested. "I'm kidding," TJ said. Clearly, this calls for diversionary tactics. Most of us should find a way to the front of the vessel and attack. We cause a disturbance, draw as many of those baddies as we can away from the gangplanks, give Magnus a chance to get aboard, and challenge Loki.
"Wait a second."
"I agree with Union Boy," said Mallory.
"Yep,"
Halfborn hefted his battle axe.
"Battle axe is thirsty for Jotun blood."
"Hold on," I said. "That's suicide."
"Nah," Blitz said. "Kid, we've been talking about this, and we've got a plan. I brought some dwarven ropes. Mallory's got grappling hooks. Hearth's got his runestones. With luck, we can scale the prow of that ship and start making chaos."
He patted one of the supply bags he'd carried from the Big Banana.
"Don't worry. I've got some surprises in store for those undead warriors. You sneak up the aft gangway, find Loki, and demand a duel. Then the fighting should stop. We'll be fine."
"Yeah," Halfborn said. "Then we'll come watch you beat that main fritter at insults."
"And I'll throw a walnut at him," Mallory finished. "Give us 30 minutes or so to get in position. Sam, Alex, take good care of our boy."
"We will,"
Sam said. Even Alex did not complain. I realized I'd been completely outmaneuvered. My friends had united on a plan to maximize my chances, regardless of how dangerous it might be for them.
"Guys,"
Hearth signed, "time is wasting. Here, for you." From his pouch, he handed me Othala, the same runestone we'd taken from Andoron's cairn. Lying in my palm, it brought back the smell of rotting reptile flesh and burnt brownies.
"Thanks," I said. "But why this particular rune?"
"Does not just mean inheritance," Hearth signed. "Othala symbolizes aid on a journey. Use it once we are gone. It should protect you."
"How?"
He shrugged. "Don't ask me. I'm just the sorcerer. All right, then, TJ said. Alex, Sam, Magnus, we'll see you on that ship. Before I could object, or even thank them, the rest of the group trundled off through the snow. In their Jotunish white clothes, they quickly disappeared into the terrain. I turned to Alex and Sam. How long have you all been planning this? Despite her cracked and bleeding lips, Alex grinned.
About as long as you've been clueless. So, a while. We should get going, Sam said. Shall we try your rune?
I looked down at Othala. I wondered if there was some connection between inheritance and aid on a journey. I couldn't think of any. I didn't like where this rune came from or what it stood for, but I supposed it made sense that I'd have to use it. We'd earned it with a lot of pain and suffering, the same way we'd earned the mead. Do I just throw it in the air? I wondered.
I imagine Hearth would say, Alex continued in sign language,
yes, you idiot. I was pretty sure that wasn't what Hearth would say. I tossed the rune. The Othala dissolved in a wisp of snow. I hoped it would reappear in Hearth's rune bag after a day or two, the way runes usually did after he used them. I definitely didn't want to buy him a replacement. Nothing happened, I noted. Then I glanced to either side of me. Alex and Sam had disappeared. Oh, gods, I vaporized you! I tried to stand up, but unseen hands grabbed me from either side and dragged me back down.
I'm right here, Alex said. Sam? Here,
Sam confirmed.
It seems the rune made us invisible. I can see myself, but not you guys.
I glanced down. Sam was right. I could see myself just fine, but the only sign of my two friends was their impressions where they sat in the snow. I wondered why Othala had chosen invisibility. Was it drawing on my personal experience, feeling invisible when I was homeless? Or maybe the magic was shaped by Hearthstone's family experience. I imagined he'd wished he were invisible to his father for most of his childhood. Whatever the case, I didn't intend to waste this chance. Let's get moving, I said.
Hold hands, Alex ordered.
She took my left hand with no particular affection, as if I were a walking stick. Sam did not take my other hand, but I suspected it wasn't for religious reasons. She just liked the idea of Alex and me holding hands. I could almost hear Sam smiling.
Okay, she said. Let's go.
We trudged along the stone ridge, heading for the shore. I worried about leaving a trail of footprints, but the snow and wind quickly blew away all traces of our passage. The temperature and wind were as bitter as the day before, but Scotty's apple cider must have been working. My breathing didn't feel like I was inhaling glass. I didn't have the need to check my face every few seconds to make sure my nose hadn't fallen off. Over the howl of the wind and the boom of glaciers calving into the bay, other sounds reached us from the deck of Naglfar. Chains clanking, beams creaking, giants barking orders, and the boots of last-minute arrivals tromping across the fingernailed deck. The ship must have been very close to sailing. We were about 100 yards from the dock when Alex yanked on my hand.
Down, you idiot!
I dropped in place, though I didn't see how we could hide much better than being invisible. Emerging from the wind and snow, passing within 10 feet of us, a troop of ghoulish soldiers marched toward Naglfar. I hadn't seen them coming, and Alex was right. I didn't want to trust that invisibility would keep me hidden from these guys. Their tattered leather armor was glazed with ice. Their bodies were nothing but desiccated bits of flesh clinging to bones. Blue spectral light flickered inside their rib cages and skulls, making me think of birthday candles parading across the worst birthday cake ever. As the undead tromped past, I noticed that the soles of their boots were studded with nails, like cleats. I remembered something Halfborn Gunderson had once told me. Because the road to Helheim was icy, the dishonored dead were buried with nailed shoes to keep them from slipping along the way. Now those boots were marching their owners back to the world of the living. Alex's hand shivered in mine, or maybe I was the one shivering. At last the dead passed us, heading for the docks and the ship of the dead. I got unsteadily to my feet.
Allah defend us, Sam muttered.
I desperately hoped that if the big guy was real, Sam had some pull with him. We were going to need defending.
Our friends are facing that, Alex said. We've got to hurry.
She was right again. The only thing that would make me want to go aboard a ship filled with thousands of those zombies was knowing that if we didn't, our friends would fight them alone. That wasn't going to happen. I stepped into the tracks left by the dead army, and immediately, whispering voices filled my head.
Magnus! Magnus!
Pain spiked my eyes. My knees buckled. I knew these voices. Some were harsh and angry, others kind and gentle. All of them echoed in my mind, demanding attention. One voice was my mother's. I staggered.
Hey!
Alex hissed.
Wait, what is that?
Did she hear the voices too? I turned, trying to pinpoint their source. I hadn't seen it before, but about 50 feet away, in the direction from which the zombies had come, a dark square hole had appeared in the snow, a ramp leading down into nothingness.
Magnus,
whispered Uncle Randolph's voice.
I'm so sorry, my boy. Can you forgive me? Come down. Let me see you once more. Magnus,
said a voice I'd only heard in dreams. Carolyn, Randolph's wife.
Please forgive him. His heart was in the right place. Come, darling. I want to meet you. Are you our cousin?
Said the voice of a little girl. Emma, Randolph's older daughter.
My daddy gave me an Othalaroon too. Would you like to see it?
Most painful of all, my mom called,
Come on, Magnus!
In the cheerful tone she used to use when she was encouraging me to hurry up the trail so she could share an amazing vista with me. Except now there was a coldness to her voice, as if her lungs were filled with Freon.
Hurry!
The voices tore at me, taking little pieces of my mind. Was I 16? Was I 12 or 10? Was I in Niflheim or the Blue Hills or on Uncle Randolph's boat? Alex's hand dropped from mine. I didn't care. I stepped toward the cave. Somewhere behind me, Sam said,
Guys?
She sounded concerned, on the edge of panic, but her voice didn't seem any more real to me than the whispering spirits. She couldn't stop me. She couldn't see my footprints on the trampled path left by the zombie soldiers. If I ran, I could make it down that icy road and plunge into Helheim before my friends knew what had happened. The thought thrilled me. My family was down there. Hel, the goddess of the dishonored dead, had told me as much when I'd met her on Bunker Hill. She'd promised I could join them. Maybe they needed my help. Jack pulsed warmly against my throat. Why was he doing that? Off to my left, Alex muttered, No, I won't listen.
Alex, Sam said. Thank God! Where's Magnus?
Why did Sam sound so concerned? I had a vague recollection that we were in Niflheim for a reason. I I probably shouldn't be diving into Helheim right now. That would probably kill me. The whispering voices got louder, more insistent. My mind fought against them. I resisted the urge to run toward that dark ramp. I was invisible because of the Othala rune, the rune of inheritance. What if this was the downside of its magic? It was allowing me to hear the voices of my dead, pulling me into their realm. Alex found my hand again. Got him. I fought down a surge of irritation. Why? I croaked. I know, Alex said, her voice surprisingly gentle. I hear them too. But you can't follow them. Slowly, the dark ramp closed. The voices stopped. The wind and snow began to erase the tracks of the zombies.
You guys okay?
Sam called, her voice an octave higher than usual. Yeah, I said, not feeling very okay. I'm sorry about that. Don't be. Alex squeezed my fingers. I heard my grandfather. I'd almost forgotten what he sounded like. And other voices. Atrian. She choked on the name. I almost didn't dare ask. Who? A friend, she said, loading the word with all sorts of possible meanings. Committed suicide. Her hand went limp in mine, but I didn't let her go. I was tempted to reach out with my power, to try to heal her, to share the backwash of pain and memories that would flood my head from Alex's past. But I didn't. I hadn't been invited there. Sam was silent for a count of 10.
Alex, I'm so sorry. I didn't hear anything.
Be glad, I said.
Yeah,
Alex agreed. Part of me was still resisting the urge to run across the snow, fling myself down, and claw at the ground until the tunnel reopened. I'd heard my mother. Even if it was just a cold echo, or a trick, a cruel joke from hell. I turned toward the sea. Suddenly, I was more afraid of staying on solid ground than I was of boarding the ship of the dead. Let's go, I said. Our friends are counting on us.
Chapter 41. I call a timeout. The gangplank was made of toenails. If that isn't enough to gross you out, then no amount of Kvasir's mead will help me give you a sufficiently disgusting description. Though the ramp was 50 feet wide, it got so much traffic we had trouble finding an opening. We timed our ascent to follow a troop of zombies aboard, but I almost got stepped on by a giant carrying a stack of spears. Once at the top, we ducked to one side, pressing ourselves against the railing. In person, the ship was even more horrible than in my dreams. The deck seemed to stretch out forever, a glistening patchwork of yellow, black, and gray nail plates, like the hide of some armored prehistoric creature. Hundreds of giants bustled about, looking almost human size in comparison with the vessel. Stone giants, mountain giants, frost giants, hill giants, and a few nattily dressed fellows who might have been metropolitan giants, all coiling ropes, stacking weapons, and shouting at each other in a variety of Jotun dialects. The undead were not so industrious. Taking up most of the vast deck, they stood at attention in ranks of ghostly white and blue, tens of thousands, like they were waiting for a parade review. Some were mounted on zombie horses. Others had zombie dogs or wolves at their side. A few even had zombie birds of prey perched on their skeletal arms. They all seemed perfectly content to stand in silence until further orders. Many of them had waited centuries for this final battle. I suppose they figured a little longer wouldn't hurt. The giants did their best to avoid the undead. They stepped gingerly around the legions, cursing them for being in the way, but didn't touch them or threaten them directly. I imagined I might feel the same way if I found myself sharing a ship with a horde of strangely behaved, heavily armed rodents. I scanned the deck for Loki. I spotted nobody in a bright white admiral's uniform, but that meant nothing. In those vast crowds, he could have been anywhere, disguised as anyone. Or he could have been below decks, having a leisurely pre-Ragnarok breakfast. So much for my plan of walking right up to him unopposed and saying, "Hi, I challenge you to a duel of name-calling, stupid head." On the foredeck, maybe half a mile away, a giant paced back and forth, waving an axe and shouting orders. He was too far off for me to make out many details, but from my dreams I recognized his hunched, gaunt form and his elaborate ribcage shield. He was Frim, captain of the vessel. His voice carried over the din of crashing waves and growling Jotuns.
"Make ready, you cow-footed cowards! The passage is clear! If you don't move faster, I'll feed you to Garm!"
Then, somewhere behind the captain, toward the prow, an explosion shook the boat. Screaming, smoking giants tumbled through the air like acrobats shot from cannons.
"We're under attack!" someone yelled. "Get them!"
Our friends had arrived. I couldn't see them, but over the din of confusion, I heard the brassy tones of a reveille from a bugle. I could only assume TJ had found the instrument under his firing caps, marksman's glasses, and hardtack. Above Captain Hrim, a golden rune blazed in the sky. Thurisots, the sign for destruction, but also the symbol of the god Thor. Hearthstone couldn't have picked a better rune to strike fear and confusion into a bunch of giants. Lightning bolts blasted from the rune in every direction, frying giants and undead alike. More giants swarmed the upper deck. Not that they had much choice. The ship was so packed with troops that the crowds pushed the front lines forward, whether they wanted to go or not. An avalanche of bodies choked ramps and stairways. A mob overtook Captain Hrim and carried him along as he waved his axe above his head and yelled to no effect. The undead legions mostly stayed in their ranks, but even they turned their heads toward the chaos, as if mildly curious. Next to me, Sam muttered,
"Now or never."
Alex let go of my hand. I heard the hissing sound of her garrote being pulled from her belt loops. We started forward, occasionally touching each other's shoulders to keep our bearings. I ducked as a giant strode over me. We wove our way through a legion of zombie cavalry, their spears bristling with frosty light, their horses' dead white eyes staring at nothing. I heard a war cry that sounded as if it had come from Half-Born Gunderson. I hoped he hadn't taken his shirt off like he normally did in combat. Otherwise he might catch cold while he fought to the death. Another rune exploded over the prow. Issa, ice, which must have been easy to cast in Niflheim. A wave of frost surged across Naglfar's portside, turning a whole swath of giants into ice sculptures. In the gray morning light, I caught the glimpse of a small bronze object flying toward Captain Hrim, and I thought one of my friends had lobbed a grenade. But instead of exploding, the grenade enlarged as it fell, expanding to an impossibly large size, until the captain and a dozen of his nearest Jotun friends disappeared under a metal duck the size of a Starbucks store. Near the starboard rail, another bronze mallard ballooned into being, pushing a battalion of zombies into the sea. Giants screamed and fell back in chaos, as one does when large metal ducks rain from the sky.
"Expandadux," I said. "Blitz outdid himself."
"Keep going," Alex said. "We're close now." Perhaps we shouldn't have spoken.
In the nearest line of zombie warriors, a thane with golden armbands turned his wolf-faced helmet in our direction. A snarl rattled in his ribcage. He said something in a language I didn't know. His voice wet and hollow, like water dripping in a coffin. His men drew rusted swords from moldy sheaths and turned to face us. I glanced at Sam and Alex. They were visible, so I assumed I was, too. Like some sort of bad joke, the kind of magical protection you'd expect from Mr. Alderman, our Othala cover had broken in the exact center of the ship's main deck in front of a legion of undead. Zombies encircled us. Most of the giants were still running forward to deal with our friends, but a few Yotuns noticed us, yelled in outrage, and came to join the killing party.
"Well, Sam," Alex said, "it's been nice knowing you."
"What about me?" I asked.
"Jury's still out."
She turned into a mountain lion and lunged at the Draugr Thane, biting his head clean off, then moved through the ranks, changing form effortlessly from wolf to human to eagle, each one deadlier than the last. Sam pulled out her Valkyrie spear. With searing light, she blasted through the undead, burning dozens at a time, but hundreds more pressed forward, their swords and spears bristling. I drew Jack and yelled, "Fight!"
"Okay,"
he yelled back, sounding just as panicked as I was. He whirled around me, doing his best to keep me safe, but I found myself with a problem particular to children of Frey. And Harryar have a saying, "Kill the healer first." This military philosophy was perfected by seasoned Viking warriors who, once in Valhalla, learned to play video games. The idea is simple. You target any guy in the enemy's ranks who can heal your opponent's wounds and send them back into combat. Kill the healer, and the rest die sooner. Besides, the healer is probably soft and squishy and easy to eliminate. Evidently, giants and zombies also knew this pro tip. Maybe they played the same video games in Harryar did while waiting for Doomsday. Somehow, they pegged me for a healer, ignored Alex and Sam, and crowded toward me. Arrows flew past my ears. Spears jabbed at my belly. Axes hurtled between my legs. The quarters were much too close for so many combatants. Most of the Draugr weapons found Draugr targets. But I supposed zombies didn't worry too much about friendly fire. I did what I could to look fighterly. With my Inherye strength, I punched straight through the nearest zombie's chest cavity, which was like punching through a vat of dry ice. Then, as he fell, I grabbed his sword and impaled his nearest comrade. "Who needs a healer now?" I yelled. For about 10 seconds, we seemed to be doing okay. Another rune exploded. Another expandeduct visited mallard-shaped destruction upon our enemies. From the prow came the sharp report of TJ's 1861 Springfield. I heard Mallory cursing in Gaelic. Half-born Gunderson yelled, "I am half-born of Flom!" To which a dim-witted giant replied, "Flom? What a dump!" "Roar!" Half-born's howl of anger shook the boat, followed by the sound of his battle axe plowing through rows of bodies. Alex and Sam fought like twin demons, Sam's blazing spear and Alex's razor-sharp garrote scything through the undead with equal speed. But with so many enemies surrounding us, it was only a matter of time before a hit connected. The butt of a spear caught me in the side of my head, and I crumpled to my knees.
"Senor!"
Jack shouted. I saw a zombie's axe blade hurtling toward my face. I knew Jack wouldn't have time to stop it. With all the poetic prowess of a Cavassier's mead drinker, I thought, "Well, this sucks." Then something happened that was not my death. Angry pressure built in my stomach. a certainty that all this fighting had to stop, must stop if we were going to complete our mission. I roared even louder than Halfborn Gunderson. Golden light exploded outward in all directions, blasting across the deck of the ship, ripping swords from their owner's hands, turning projectiles in mid-air and sending them hurtling into the sea, stripping entire battalions of their spears and shields and axes. I staggered to my feet. The fighting had stopped. Every weapon within the sound of my voice had been violently blasted from its owner's reach. Even Jack had gone flying somewhere off the starboard side, which I imagined I'd be hearing about later if I survived. Everyone on the ship, friend and enemy, had been disarmed by the peace of Frey, a power I'd only managed to invoke once before. Wary giants and confused zombies backed away from me. Alex and Sam ran to my side. My head throbbed. My vision swam. One of my molars was missing, and my mouth was full of blood. The peace of Frey was a pretty good party trick. It definitely got everyone's attention. But it wasn't a permanent fix. Nothing would stop our enemies from simply retrieving their weapons and returning to the business of healer slaughter. But before the moment of empty-handed awe wore off, a familiar voice spoke somewhere to my left.
"Well now, Magnus, that was dramatic."
The Draugr parted to reveal Loki in his crisp white admiral's uniform, his hair the color of autumn leaves, his scarred lips twisted in a grin, his eyes bright with malicious humor. Behind him stood Sigun, his long-suffering wife, who had spent centuries collecting serpent venom in a cup to keep it from dripping into Loki's face, a duty which was totally not covered in your typical marriage vows. Her pale, emaciated face was impossible to read, though blood-red tears still streamed from her eyes. I thought I detected a slight tightness in her lips, as if she were disappointed to see me again.
"Loki!" I spat blood. I could barely make my mouth work. "I challenge you to a flighting!"
He stared at me as if waiting for me to complete the sentence. Maybe he expected me to add, "A flighting? With this other guy who's good at insults and way more intimidating than I am." Around us, the endless ranks of warriors seemed to be holding their breath, even though the zombies had no breath to hold. Njord, Frigg, Skadi, all of them had assured me that Loki would have to accept my challenge. That was tradition. Honor demanded it. I might have a busted mouth, a ringing head, and no guarantee that the meat of Kvasir would weave poetry with my vocal cords, but at least I would now get my shot to defeat the trickster in a war of words. Loki lifted his face to the cold gray sky and laughed.
"Thanks anyway, Magnus Chase," he said. "But I think I'll just kill you."
Chapter 42. I Start Small. Sam lunged. I guessed she was the least surprised that Loki would pull a sleazeball move like refusing my challenge. Before her spear could hit her father's chest, a loud voice roared,
"Stop!"
Sam stopped. My mind was still fuzzy. For a second, I thought Loki had shouted the order, and Sam had been forced to obey. All Sam's training and practice, her fasting and confidence, had been for nothing. Then I realized Loki hadn't given the order at all. In fact, he looked quite annoyed. Sam had stopped of her own free will. Crowds of Draugr and giants parted as Captain Hrym limped toward us. His axe was missing. His fancy ribcage shield was dented with an impression that might have been made by a very large duck's bill. His ancient face wasn't any prettier up close. Wisps of icicle-white beard clung to his chin, His pale blue eyes gleamed deep in their sockets, like they were melting their way into his brain. His leathery mouth made it difficult to tell if he was glowering at us or about to spit out a watermelon seed. And the captain's smell? Yeesh. Prim's moldy white furs made me nostalgic for the regular old man odors of Uncle Randolph's closet.
Who called for a challenge?
Prim boomed.
I did, I said. A flighting against Loki. Unless he is too scared to face me.
The crowd murmured, ooh. Loki snarled.
Oh, please. You can't bait me, Magnus Chase. Prim, we don't have time for this. The ice has melted. The way is clear. Smash these trespassers and let's sail.
Now wait a minute, Prim said. This is my ship. I am captain.
Loki sighed. He took off his admiral's hat and punched the inside, obviously trying to control his temper.
My dear friend,
he smiled up at the captain.
We've been through this. We share command of Naglfar.
Your troops, Prim said. My ship. And when we are in disagreement, all ties must be broken by Suurt.
Suurt? I gulped down another mouthful of blood. I wasn't thrilled to hear the name of my least favorite fire giant. The dude who'd blasted a hole in my chest and knocked my flaming corpse off the Longfellow Bridge.
Is, Suurt here too?
Loki snorted.
A fire giant in Niflheim? Not likely. You see, my dense young and hair ye, Suurt technically owns this ship, but that's just because Naglfar is registered in Muspelheim. More favorable tax laws.
That's not the point,
yelled Prim.
Since Suurt is not here, final command is mine.
No, Loki said with strained patience. Final command is ours. And I say our troops need to get moving.
And I say a properly issued challenge must be accepted. Those are standard rules of engagement. Unless you are too cowardly, as the boy claims.
Loki laughed.
Cowardly? Of facing a child like this? Oh, please. He's nothing.
Well then, I said, show us your silver tongue. Unless that got burned along with the rest of your face.
Ooh,
said the crowd. Alex raised an eyebrow at me. Her expression seemed to say, that was not as lame as I might have expected. Loki gazed at the heavens.
Father Farbati, Mother Lafe, why me? My talents are wasted on this audience.
Prim turned to me.
Will you and your allies abide by a ceasefire until the flighting is done?
Alex responded, Magnus is our flighter, not our leader. But yes, we will hold off our attacks.
Even the ducks?
Prim asked gravely. Alex frowned, as if this was a serious request indeed. Very well. Even the ducks.
Then it is agreed,
Prim bellowed.
Loki, you have been challenged. By ancient custom, you must accept.
Loki bit back whatever insult he was going to fling at the captain, probably because Prim was twice as tall as he was.
Very well. I will insult Magnus Chase into the deck boards and smear his remains under my shoe. Then we will sail. Samira, dear, hold my hat.
He tossed his admiral's cap. Samira let it fall at her feet. She smiled at him coldly.
Hold your own hat, father.
Ooh, said the crowd. Anger rippled across Loki's face. I could almost see the ideas churning in his head. All the wonderful ways he could torture us to death. But he said nothing.
Ah, flighting, Hrim announced. Until it is over, let no more blows be struck. Let no more ducks be thrown. Allow those enemy warriors forward to see the contest.
With some jostling and cursing, our friends made their way through the crowd. Considering what they'd been through, they looked all right. Halfborn had indeed taken off his shirt. Written across his chest, in what looked like giant's blood, was Flom, with a big heart around it. TJ's rifle muzzle steamed in the cold from so many discharges. His bayonet dripped zombie slime, and his bugle had been twisted into a brass pretzel. I couldn't really blame our enemies for doing that. Hearthstone looked unharmed, but drained, which was understandable after destroying so many enemies with ice and lightning. At his side strode Blitzen, and giants 10 times the dwarf's size scrambled to get out of his way. Some muttered fearfully, calling him Duckmaster. Others clawed at their necks, which Blitzen had somehow collared with tight-fitting chainmail neckties. Giants live in fear of neckties. Mallory Keen was hopping, apparently having rebroken the same foot she'd broken in Norway. But she hopped fiercely, like a true warrior and daughter of Frigg. She sheathed her knives and signed to me, I have the walnut. That would have made a great code phrase if we were spies talking about a nuclear weapon or something. Unfortunately, she just meant that she had the walnut. Now it was up to me to get Loki into it. I wondered if Mallory could open it and suck him inside without me first beating him in insult combat. Probably not. Nothing so far had been that simple. I doubted easy mode would start now. Finally, Jack came floating back to me, grumbling,
Piece of fraying me? Not cool, senor.
Then he settled next to Samira to watch the action. The crowd made a rough circle, maybe 30 feet in diameter, around Loki and me. Surrounded by giants, I felt like I was at the bottom of a well. In the sudden quiet, I could hear the rumble of snow thunder in the distance, the crackle of melting glacial ice, the quiver and whine of Naglfar's iron mooring cables straining to break free. My head throbbed. My busted mouth oozed blood. My hole where the tooth used to be had started to hurt. And I did not feel poetic. Loki grinned. He spread his arms as if to welcome me with an embrace.
Well, Magnus, look at you. Flighting in the big leagues like a grown-up. Or whatever you call an inheritee who can't age, but is learning to be not quite so much of a whiny brat. If you weren't such a useless piece of fluff, I might be impressed.
The words stung. I mean, they literally stung. They seemed to splash into my ear canals like acid, trickling down my eustachian tubes and into my throat. I tried to reply, but Loki thrust his scarred face into mine.
Little son of Frey, he said. Walking into a battle he can't win, with no clue, no planning, just a little mead in his stomach. Did you really think that would compensate for your complete lack of skill? I suppose it makes sense. You're so used to relying on your friends to do all your fighting. Now it's your turn. Sad. A no-talent loser. Do you even know what you are, Magnus Chase? Should I tell you?
The crowd laughed and jostled each other. I didn't dare look at my friends. Shame washed through me.
You're one to talk, I managed. Are you a giant masquerading as a god, or a god masquerading as a giant? Are you on anybody's side but your own?
Of course not,
Loki laughed.
We're all free agents on this ship, aren't we, gang? We look out for ourselves.
The giants roared. The zombies shifted and hissed, their icy blue auras crackling in their skulls.
Loki looks out for Loki.
He drummed his fingers on his Admiralty medals.
I can't trust anyone else, can I?
His wife, Seagoon, tilted her head ever so slightly, but Loki didn't seem to notice.
At least I'm honest about it, Loki continued. And to answer your question, I'm a giant. But here's the thing, Magnus. The Aesir are just a different generation of giants. So they're giants too. This whole gods versus giants thing is ridiculous. We're one big, unhappy family. That's something you should understand, you dysfunctional little human. You say you choose your family. You say you've got a new group of brothers and sisters in Valhalla, and isn't that sweet? Stop lying to yourself. You're never free of your blood. You are just like your real family, as weak and love-besotted as Frey, as desperate and spineless as old Uncle Randolph, and as stupidly optimistic and as dead as your mother. Poor kid. You've got the worst of both sides, Frey and Chase. You're a mess.
The crowd laughed. They seemed to grow larger, drowning me in their shadows. Loki loomed over me.
Stop lying to yourself, Magnus. You're nobody. You're a mistake. One of Frey's many bastards. He left your mom. Forgot you completely until you recovered his sword.
That's not true.
But it is. You know it. At least I claim my children. Sam and Alex here, they've known me since they were little kids. But you? You're not even worth Frey sending a birthday card. And who does your hair?
He howled.
Oh, right! Alex cut it, didn't she? You didn't think that meant anything, did you? She doesn't care about Magnus Chase. She just needed to use you. She's her mother's child. I'm so proud.
Alex's face was livid, but she didn't speak. None of my friends moved or made a sound. This was my fight. They couldn't interfere. Where was the magic of Kvasir's mead? Why couldn't I come up with a decent zinger? Did I really think the mead could compensate for my complete lack of skill? Wait, those were Loki's words, burrowing into my brain. I couldn't let him define me. You're evil, I said. Even that sounded half-hearted.
Oh, come on!
Loki grinned.
Don't throw that good and evil stuff at me. That's not even a Norse concept. Are you good because you kill your enemies, but your enemies are bad because they kill you? What sort of logic is that?
He leaned in close. He was definitely taller than I was now. The top of my head barely reached his shoulders.
A little secret, Magnus. There is no good and evil.
There's only capable and incapable. I am capable. You are not.
He didn't push me, not physically, but I stumbled back. I was literally withering under the laughter of the crowd. Even Blitzen was taller than me now. Behind Loki, Sigun watched me with interest, her red tears glistening down her cheeks.
Ah!
Loki pouted with fake sympathy.
What are you going to do now, Magnus? Complain that I'm mean? Criticize me for murder and deceit? Go right ahead! Sing my greatest hits! You just wish you were so capable. You can't fight. You can't think on your feet. You can't even express yourself in front of your so-called friends. What chance do you have against me?
I continued to shrink. A few more lines from Loki and I would be 2 feet tall. Around my boots, the decking began to scritch and shift, finger and toenails curling upward like hungry plant shoots.
Give it your best shot, Loki challenged. No? Still tongue-tied? Then I guess I'll tell you what I really think of you.
I looked at the leering faces of giants, and the grim faces of my friends, all forming a ring around me, and I knew this was a well I would never climb out of. Chapter 43. I have a big finish. I desperately tried to think of my best insults. You're a main fritter. You're dumb. You're ugly. Yeah. My best really wasn't that impressive, especially coming from a guy who was literally shrinking under Loki's onslaught. Hoping for inspiration, I glanced again at my friends. Sam looked stern and determined, somehow still believing in me. Alex Fierro looked angry and defiant, somehow still believing that if I messed this up, she would kill me. Blitz had developed a tick in his eye, like he was watching me ruin a beautiful tailoring job. Hearthstone seemed sad and weary, scrutinizing my face as if searching for a lost rune. TJ, Mallory, and Halfborn were all tense, scanning the giants around them, probably trying to formulate a plan B, in which the B stood for Bad Magnus. Then my gaze rested on Sigun, standing discreetly behind her husband, her hands laced, her strange red eyes fixed on me as if she were waiting. Waiting for what? She had stood by her husband's side when everyone else abandoned him. For centuries, she had tended to him, keeping the snake's venom from his face as much as she could, despite the fact that Loki had cheated on her, verbally abused her, ignored her. Even now, he barely looked at her. Sigun was loyal beyond belief. Yet back in Loki's cave, during the giant's wedding ceremony, I was almost positive she had helped us, distracting her husband at a critical time to keep him from killing me and my friends. Why would she resist her husband like that? What did she want? It was almost as if she was subtly working to undermine him, as if she wanted to delay Ragnarok and see her husband back in his cave, lashed to the rocks and suffering. Maybe Loki was right. Maybe he couldn't trust anyone. Not even Sigun. Then I thought about what Percy Jackson had told me back on the deck of the USS Constitution. That my biggest strength wasn't my training. It was the team around me. A flighting was supposed to cut people down to size, to insult them into nothingness. But I was a healer. I didn't cut people. I put them back together. I couldn't play by Loki's rules and hope to win. I had to play by my rules. I took a deep breath.
Let me tell you about Mallory Keen. Loki's smile wavered.
Who is that, and why should I care?
I'm so glad you asked.
I projected my voice into the crowd with as much volume and confidence as my tiny little lungs would allow.
Mallory Keen sacrificed her life to correct her own mistake and save the lives of a bunch of school kids. Now she is the fiercest fighter and the best cursor in Valhalla. She holds Floor 19 together as a team, even when we want to kill each other. Can any of you claim the same level of camaraderie?
The giants shifted uncomfortably. The Draugr eyed each other like, I've been wanting to kill this guy forever, but he's already dead.
Mallory opened the doors of Suttung's cave with just 2 daggers, I continued. She defeated the 9 thralls of Boggy with nothing but trickery and a rock. And when she found out she was the daughter of Frigg, she refrained from attacking the goddess.
Ooh. The giants nodded appreciatively. Loki waved aside my words.
I don't think you understand how a flighting works, little man. Those aren't even insults.
Let me tell you about Halfborn Gunderson, I shouted over him. Berserker extraordinaire, the glory of Flom. He conquered kingdoms with Ivar the Boneless. He single-handedly slew the giant Boggy, saving his hometown and making his mother proud. He has steered our boat straight and true across the 9 worlds, his battle axe doing more damage than most battalions, and he's done all this while wearing no shirt.
He pulls it off pretty well, too, muttered another giant, poking the berserker's abs.
Halfborn slapped his hand away.
And the deeds of Thomas Jefferson Jr., I yelled. Those are worthy of any Viking hall. He charged into enemy gunfire to meet his nemesis, Geoffrey Toussaint, face to face. He died taking up an impossible challenge, like a worthy son of Tyr. He is the heart and soul of our fellowship, a driving force that never fails. He defeated the giant Hrungnir with his trusty Springfield 1861, and wears the flint shard from the giant's heart above his eye as a badge of honor. It can also light matches.
The giants nodded, no doubt thinking how handy this would be for lighting their pipes in the cold winds of Niflheim.
And Blitzen, son of Freya.
I smiled at my dwarf friend, whose eyes were getting dewy.
He bested Atri Jr. at the forges of Nidavellir. He makes the best cutting-edge fashions in the 9 worlds. He sewed the magical bowling bag of Tiny. He stood face-to-face, empty-handed against the dragon alderman and forced the monster to back down. His patented stainless steel neckties and expandedux are the stuff of Jotun nightmares.
Several giants wailed in terrified agreement.
Stop this!
Loki spat.
This is ridiculous! What's all this... this positivity? Magnus Chase, your hair is still horrible, and your clothes...
Hearthstone! I roared.
Was it my imagination, or was I getting taller again? It seemed I could look my opponent in the eyes now without straining my neck.
The greatest rune magician in the 9 worlds. His bravery is legendary. He is willing to sacrifice anything for his friends. He has overcome the most horrible challenges. The death of his brother, the scorn of his family.
My voice cracked with emotion. But Loki did not speak into the void. The crowd stared at me expectantly, some with tears in their eyes.
His own father turned into a dragon, I said. Yet Hearthstone faced him, faced his worst nightmares and emerged victorious, breaking a curse, destroying hatred with compassion. Without him, we would not be here.
He is the mightiest and most beloved elf I know. He is my brother.
Hearthstone placed his hand on his heart. His face was as pink as the scarf Alex had given him. Captain Hrim sniffled. It seemed like he wanted to give Hearthstone a hug, but was afraid that might not look good in front of his crew.
Samira Al-Abbas, I said. Daughter of Loki, but better than Loki.
Loki laughed.
I beg your pardon.
This girl is not even a Valkyrie, sworn to Odin's most important tasks.
My words were coming easily now. I could feel a rhythm to them, an unstoppable cadence and certainty. Maybe that was because of Kvasir's mead. Or maybe it was because I was speaking the truest things I knew.